Counsel, you may proceed.
Good morning, Your Honors. Janet Tong, Federal Defenders here for Ms. Pilgrim. I'd like to talk about the 404B issue today, and I'm going to try to keep my eye on the clock and just try to save some time for rebuttal.
Very well.
The marijuana arrest evidence should never have been admitted in Ms. Pilgrim's trial.
Could you speak just a little more loudly, please, or get closer to the microphone?
I'm sorry, Judge Gibson.
It should work pretty well if you stand in the middle because they're aimed at the speaker, but you're going to have to speak a little louder if you don't mind.
Yes, Your Honor. I'll try to speak up.
Great. Thank you.
So the marijuana arrest evidence should never have been admitted in Ms. Pilgrim's trial because it was character evidence, plain and simple. Now, let me say this. As I stand before you here today, we've been through two rounds of briefings, two rounds of motions, and full appellate briefing. And we still don't know what the government's precise evidential hypothesis is that ties that arrest evidence to the element that had to be proven, the knowledge of the existence, the presence of drugs in a hidden compartment in the car.
Well, a person who smuggles drugs once is more likely to do it again a month later.
That's exactly my point, Your Honor. It's character evidence.
Well, it means that it's not a mistake, it's not an accident, it's not, oh my gosh, someone put this in here without my knowledge. It's just amazing to me that it's there.
And, Your Honor, I think that's what that is that's the exact pattern that propensity shows. That's what 404A prohibits from coming into trial.
Similar, it's close in time, and it's similar, and the most likely defense to a crime of this kind is, I had no idea it was in there. Why isn't that permissible?
Your Honor, you raise a very good point, which is similarity is a very important part of the 404B analysis. But what the cases come back to is that what the similarity has to relate to is the evidential hypothesis the government's required to present. Under Mayans and under this Court's cases, over and again, there has to be a logical connection other than just saying the words knowledge or absence of mistake. I agree with Your Honor 100% that there is absolutely 401 relevance. Sure, there's a natural inference. If Ms. Pilgrim was found with drugs in the car one time, she did it once, therefore she did it again. But was the similarity enough? Well, the only way we'll know that is if we know what the evidential hypothesis is. Now, suppose
it's knowledge and absence of mistake. Suppose it's knowledge and absence of mistake.
So if what's to be proven is as the government has just basically said, is knowledge and absence of mistake, what the cases that have permitted evidence to come in have shown is that there is some kind of notice inquiry that's a burden that's placed on the defendant because of certain characteristics of the first prior act. For example,
I don't understand what you're trying to tell us. What would make it enough, in your view, similar enough to have permitted this evidence to come in as a prior act evidence?
I think that's a very good question. And Ms. Pilgrim, the first time, she came in a van, and the roof of the van was just a little bit lower. There's a secret compartment in the roof. Dome light was missing. And she drove up to the border, and marijuana was discovered hidden in the roof compartment. Now, if she had come up the second time, and she was arrested, and she was let go, and if she had come up the second time in the trial in this case, and she'd come up in a van where the roof was lower or a dome light was missing,
it has to be so similar that the exact same kind of secret compartment has to be identical?
That is one type of similarity that would be permissible if that were the government's theory of relevance, of materiality, is if she was put on either notice inquiry to look further into the car that she had bought and let out of her possession. If she'd had these factors that should have tipped her off the first time, for example, you know what we've just been talking about, or if she had if there had been a similar set of factual circumstances, if somebody had told her the first time. Somebody had sold her the car, and this had happened, and the second time was a similar seller, and the same fact patterns had come up. Well, sure, she could be expected to know the second time around. That's what would make this kind of evidence relevant. Now, Garcia Orozco says that the fact of discovering drugs in the defendant's car the first time around doesn't put the defendant on notice that every single future car he or she rides in might contain drugs. Now, and that's really what's missing here, Your Honor. I think there's nothing to show for it. And if we boil it down, so if we look for something that's just a little bit more than just saying this was knowledge or this was absence of mistake, what we end up with is character evidence. It's propensity.
Well, what you're trying to do, it seems to me, is sort of read out the concept of absence of mistake.
I think, Your Honor, the absence of mistake is actually well elucidated in, for example, the Garcia Orozco case, as well as the First Circuit's case, and I think it's Aguilar, where the absence of mistake is really about this kind of notice burden. What did the defendant learn the first time? For example, if the defendant is trying to claim, if Ms. Pilgrim was trying to claim that she didn't know what cocaine looked like or she didn't know what marijuana looked like, and the first incident showed that she, in fact, does. She's got familiarity with this type of substance. She can't claim knowledge, lack of knowledge, or absence of mistake as to the identity or the nature of the contraband that's being smuggled. I think that's where absence of mistake and really, you know, that's where that kind of evidence really comes in, and that's relevant in that sense. But here, she's not claiming that. What's being admitted is evidence that she was arrested with.
What was her theory? What was her claim?
In the second trial?
In this trial.
I'm sorry. The cocaine was in a compartment in the car that she'd let. She basically bailed to somebody who was her ex-husband, who was a mechanic, and he was asked to fix the car. And he had the car for a few days. And she got the car back, and this compartment was so well concealed that...
So she's claiming, surprise to me, that there's drugs in a secret compartment.
That's correct. She's claiming she did not know.
So why isn't it sufficiently similar that she previously brought drugs to the same crossing in a secret compartment?
Within a month of the same event.
Well, like I believe Your Honors are correct that it's relevant, because if she does that, you know, she's done it before once in a secret compartment, she's more likely to have done it again because she's a bad person. Or
no, because it's a similar act. I guess what I don't understand is your requirement for similarity is that it can only be the low roof. It can't be a side compartment. And if that's true, you know, you can never have previous act evidence for somebody who regularly brings in drugs, but one time it's the driver's side door, the next time it's the passenger door, the third time it's the, you know, secret thing in the trunk, and those aren't similar. I mean, that's kind of where you're sending us.
I disagree, Your Honor, on several points. And the first I've already discussed, which is that there's the hypothesis is lacking. What did the presence of the contraband in the first car tell her? What did it do to make her know that other evidence was there? I would disagree on that element. And the other thing I'd like to point out, Your Honor, is that if we take a look at the cases where the evidence has been, similarity is not the only...
Well, speaking of other cases, what about Bebo Rodriguez?
Well, I'm glad Your Honor brought that up, because that's kind of where I was getting to, which is, if you take a look at the other cases...
That holds against you, does it not?
And Bebo Rodriguez was expressly distinguished by Garcia Orozco on the principle of lack of sufficiency and certainty of the prior act, because in Bebo Rodriguez, the defendant had not only been convicted of a prior act. If you take a look at the cases like Bebo Rodriguez and the cases that permit the evidence to be admitted, those cases, to a T, involve the conviction or admissions by the defendant of guilt for the prior act. And in Bebo Rodriguez, that case, I think that case is significant because there's even more evidence than just the fact of the prior conviction in Bebo Rodriguez. In that case, the defendant had not only admitted and been admitted to the smuggling incident that was being brought in as other acts evidence, but he'd also told police officers that he had engaged in multiple smuggling activities, smuggled not only marijuana but cocaine. And these two, the two incidents.
So the significant difference is the admission or the conviction? Is that what you're saying?
I'm saying that those, that's what distinguishes the cases on the certainty prong within the four factors that have to be taken into account in the 404B analysis. Right. That, exactly, Your Honor, that point distinguishes those cases from what's here. But right. It all goes back down to the fact that there's a lack of evidential hypothesis, and you cannot look at the factors, the sufficiency, the temporal proximity, and the similarity without keeping that in mind.
Thank you, counsel. Your time has expired.
Thank you.
We'll hear from the government.
Good morning.
Counsel, you may proceed.
My name is Jason Forge. I'm here on behalf of the United States. Your Honors, I'd like to pick up where Judge Graber and Judge O'Scanlan left off, because I think the questions you were asking and the responses you received flushed out what the defense position really is here, and that is that it's virtually impossible to admit 404B evidence. And that is the direct opposite of what the cases hold. And that was first, it was first announced by the Supreme Court in the Huddleston case 10 years ago, explaining that Rule 404B is a rule of inclusion, not exclusion. And we were reminded of that principle last year by this court sitting en banc in the Curtin case. Again, this court reminded us that, and I'm quoting from the Curtin case, Rule 404B is a rule of inclusion, not exclusion, which references at least three categories of other acts encompassing the inner workings of the mind: motive, intent, and knowledge. Once it has been established that the evidence offered serves one of these purposes, the relevant advisory committee quotes, committee notes make it clear that the only conditions justifying the exclusion of evidence are those described in Rule 403. And Judge Graber, I think you hit the nail on the head here with the questions about the similarity here. What Ms. Pilgrim is doing here is she's essentially arguing that it's insignificant, a number of similarities that separate these two incidents from the myriad other ways of smuggling drugs into the country. First of all, drugs can come into this country through any coastal state, through any northern or southern border state, yet here in these two instances, they both came in into California in the Southern District of California. Drugs can be brought into the state by plane, by commercial carrier, by boat, by person. Yet in this instance, they both came in by an automobile. The drugs, even within an automobile, can be concealed in a gas tank, in the door panels, in an engine, not in the non-factory-built compartment. Yet in this case, both instances involved a non-factory-built compartment in the vehicles. There is striking similarity here, and I use that language carefully because that's the exact same language that was used by this court in the Rubio Villarreal case. Striking similarity. In that case, the passage of time was 3 years, not 3 months as here. And as this court has held, that when the passage of time is greater, the similarity must be greater. But if you look at the facts of the Rubio Villarreal case, you'll see that in that instance, the defendant had two additional passengers in the vehicle, whereas here there were none. The vehicle was not owned by the defendant, whereas here the vehicle was owned by the defendant. And I would submit that the minor, and they are very minor differences here, the fact that it was cocaine versus marijuana, that has already been ruled by this court in both Bebo Rodriguez and in Rubio Villarreal to be an insignificant distinction. What is important, and what this court reminded us of in Bebo Rodriguez, is the nature of the act, the importation of a commercially distributable quantity of narcotics. And that's what happened here both times. And again, maybe if we take this out of the drug context, we can it would be easier for me to expose what I think is an unreasonable argument by the defense. Let's say that I had in my basement, in an ice chest, the body of a woman who had been strangled. And that was discovered. And I said, well, wow, I had no idea there was a body of a woman who had been strangled in my ice chest and then in my basement. And then 3 months later, the body of a man who had been beaten to death with a bat was found in my attic. Now, I think most people, drawing on human experience, would say each one of those events informs the other as to my knowledge of the presence of those bodies. It's just beyond the pale, not because I have a bad character. It's just too improbable for lightning to strike twice that I didn't know about a body in my basement and I didn't know about a body in my attic. And I guess the defense argument in that context would be, well, wait a minute. That first body was...
Counsel, you're getting very close to propensity here.
No, Your Honor, I don't think so, because it's not saying anything about my character. It's saying that, and that's what I mean by one informs the other. It's saying that, look, it's a very improbable circumstance. As this court has held in U.S. v. Whitehead, we didn't cite it in our papers, but we did cite U.S. v. Barbosa for the same concept. When we have an individual driving in a vehicle that contains a substantial quantity of narcotics, those facts alone, particularly here where it's the registered owner and it's the sole occupant of the vehicle, those facts alone have been deemed to be overwhelming evidence of knowledge. In fact, I think in Whitehead this court said virtually conclusive. So a denial in those contexts is very improbable. And then when you have the same thing happening 3 months later, that makes the first denial even less probable, and the second denial less probable. It's not a matter of propensity, it's a matter of probability. And when you look at the record of this case, I think you'll see this was not remotely presented as a propensity case. We had a 41-year-old defendant, and these two incidents, the incident that had her on trial and the prior incident, were presented as completely isolated events in her life. There was no attempt whatsoever to portray her as being a bad character, somebody who's prone to do this kind of thing. And just to emphasize that, let me quote from you the rebuttal argument, the entire portion of the rebuttal argument that dealt with this evidence, just to underscore that we were not talking about propensity here. This is at page 120 of the excerpt of records. I leave that to you. I'm sorry. And when you're considering all of that, defense counsel asked you not to consider the February 27, 2006 arrest for 100 pounds of marijuana. I leave that to you to decide the importance of that. But you can use that only for knowledge or the absence of mistake. But just remember the facts in this case, no mention of Blanco, very similar facts, very similar story in a Toyota minivan that she said she owned. Again, Judge O'Scanlan, we're not saying this is a bad person. She would do this no matter what the crime is, convict her of it because she's just a bad apple. No, it just goes to the very, very similar circumstances of the first instance and the second. And another way to underscore the difference between a case like Garcia Orozco, which I don't understand how the defense can rely on, Garcia Orozco, the prior incident, the defendant was a passenger in a car that was pulled over by the California Highway Patrol. It wasn't his car, and he wasn't driving it. The driver got out and ran, and so he got out and ran. They were both later apprehended, and it turned out that there was heroin in the door of the vehicle. Several years later, the defendant was caught himself driving a load of drugs into the United States. The two had virtually nothing to do with each other. One was an importation, the other was not. One, the defendant was a driver, the other, he was just a passenger. One told nothing about the other in terms of knowledge or absence of mistake, as we had here. And regarding the argument concerning certainty, I would submit that virtually all of the defense arguments here go to the weight of the evidence, not to its admissibility. And just to, since we don't get a chance to reply to the reply brief, counsel made the claim here, and she made it in her reply brief, that we've cited no case in which the other act evidence was admitted when it hadn't been established by either a confession or a conviction. And that's just not true. There were six cases. Beckman, That was a case in which the cooperator testified about the defendant's many other instances of importing drugs. Hollis, that was the crack cocaine case in Alaska, in which another cooperator testified about the defendant selling drugs on numerous occasions. Mayans, that case was reversed on other grounds, not on the 404B grounds, another case in which a cooperator testified about prior narcotic sales. Murillo, that was a case in which there was expert testimony and documentary evidence showing the defendant renting cars in a very similar MO to the charged offense. Kahan, that was another case we cited in which there were prior instances of evidence was submitted based on agent testimony of prior instances of selling stolen goods. These are all cases, even Huddleston, the Supreme Court case. The prior acts in that case were not proved by conviction or an admission. They were proved by testimony from an agent and by another witness who had purchased stolen goods from the defendant previously. So, Your Honor, I think...
Thank you, counsel. Your time has expired.
Thank you, Your Honor.
The case just argued will be submitted for decision. We will now hear case of United States versus Santana.